There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Glad to have you here. And just a week since the runoff for the primary. And today should be the day that we find out the last hanging chad in our area politically, the House District 102 race. And let me go to the audio here as they are currently counting the provisional votes in that Willie Gray, Shane Stringer race for House District 102. If we can go, do we have the feed? We have the feed. Okay, can you go the audio there? Let's go on two. Roll that. Okay, this is it. Okay.
One, two, three.
It sure sounds like the Tootsie Roll Pop owl to me. Roll that again.
One, two, three.
Okay, that actually, no, was it? Just go the other one then.
Chastity Nicole Darce.
Okay, there they are. So it was not, because I was pretty sure it was going to be.
One, two,
but no, actually, a live feed here from our news partners at WKRG, which quite possibly may, and with all due respect to probate judge Don Davis and also Mark Irwin, but this may be the closest thing I've ever seen to paint drying that is a feature of a Facebook Live video as they are counting the provisional ballots. And they're opening the boxes very, very slowly and handing out the provisional ballots to an assembled group of vote counter people that are sitting around, and I guess sometime here over the next eon or two, we'll find out those 58. There are 58 provisional ballots that would be germane to the House 102 race. So that's what they're working on now. They're opening more boxes and moving big stacks of boxes to the left and right here. When we get an answer, Dalton, I guess we'll monitor this and we get an answer if this happens sometime before the show's over at 2. We'll pass it along, you know, at the way they're counting right now.
One, two, three.
When they get finished with that, Dalton, let us know, and we'll pass that along. Because I know there's folks who have been calling and texting in, wonder what's happening in this count. Well, they just started about 9 minutes ago, and we will hopefully have the answer sometime before October. All right, on today's show, lots to do. Brendan Kirby joins us in hour number two. We'll talk more about this push coming into the state of Alabama to remind you to call Senator Jones for confirmation for Brett Kavanaugh for Supreme Court. Get in that. Also, the president speaking today to the Veterans of Foreign Wars event. We'll talk about that in the 1 o'clock hour with Brendan Kirby. And this is great. My buddy James Patterson back in studio. This is a conversation. Quite often we're talking about, credit issues, people's information getting leaked online, whether it be from a huge company like Equifax, or just something that happens when you throw your trash out. And what you do for a living is you do consumer law,
yeah,
right?
Consumer protection law, yes.
Consumer
sir.
Protection law. Well, we've talked about that in the past, and I got on a bit of a rant last week, or maybe the week before, and you chimed in on Twitter about this because I was ranting about the cost of tuition, college tuition. And I had a feeling, a theory, just something I'd come up with out of thin air, that because the availability of federal student loans and other, but student loan money being so available, that colleges and universities continued to raise their tuition because the students could get the money to pay that tuition.
That's right. That was your theory.
Yeah, that was my theory. And we're bouncing around on Twitter, and you agreed to come in because there's a lot of this, but you also deal with your clients, people that have this. We hear these stories about crazy student loan debt.
Yes.
We have friends, maybe ourselves, who have still paying on student loan debt. This is a real thing. I have a feeling this is one of the bubbles that could hit our economy.
That's right. And I've thought about that for years. And part of my practice is I also do bankruptcy work. So I have a lot of folks come in, you know, they have debt from houses or medical bills. And a lot of times folks come in with student loan debt. And it's not just $10,000 or $15,000. I mean, I have some clients sometimes come in with well over $100,000 of debt, and they're not doctor or lawyers or, you know, business owners. They're managers and working, you know, $10 an hour jobs. And what are they getting for that money? Well, they're getting nothing.
Right.
And they're strapped. They can't do much with it right now.
And there's a lot to that, because you get somebody saddled with a debt just coming out, and even if they have great potential in a career, early on in that career, you don't make as much. And then, like you pointed out, there are a lot of people, especially through the recession, that were not working at the jobs that they paid all the money to train for.
No, or they're getting degrees that really isn't helping them get the jobs they want. And it seems like a lot of times these colleges and schools are making up programs just to get people in, you know, for the student loan money. I mean, in your theory, I like your theory, because I would agree with it to some degree too.
And I'm just looking, this is anecdotal, but here's what I have for comparison, and I'll give you all some real numbers here in just a second. So I graduated from the University of Alabama. Let's be frank about it. I was supposed to graduate in 94. I graduated in December of 95.
Not bad.
Well, I mean, I did work full-time in radio for, many of those years, and my freshman year, I had a big time. Okay, put it that way. So it took me an extra semester, and I did some summer. But back then, I remember that what it would cost me per semester.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is paying for the hours of classes, not the books, but paying for the hours of classes. It cost me about $1,300 a semester. About $1,300, $1,388. For some reason, that number's in my head.
Okay.
What it would cost per semester. I'm a resident of the state of Alabama. I'm at the University of Alabama. Okay, flash forward a couple decades here, and my nephews went to University of Alabama, and talking, this has been a couple years ago this hit me, talked to my brother, and it was $5,000 for same set hours of school. Now, understand, everything's more expensive. I'm not going to go into, I remember when I bought a house in 1960. Okay, this is 1990s. Not that far back ago. Grunge was big. Hey, kids, there's a thing called grunge. 1990s. Compared to a few years ago. So we're not talking about a huge period of time, but the increase is logarithmic. And I started trying to just deduce how that could have happened. And I just remember, and you and I talked about it before we started the show today, that in the 90s, it seemed like money was getting freer. I remember friends of mine getting student loan checks, and some of them applying them properly, some of them partying and going down to Panama City for spring break.
Yeah, or buying extra things in their apartment to make their apartment look nice.
Right.
And you have that. But I think the colleges followed along with it and saw this opening of, hey, there's more money available, we can get more bang from these people, and we can just sort of artificially inflate everything. And we talked about this before. If you look at the inflation numbers, you look at student loan cost of going to school compared to everything else in our country based on inflation, it's hundreds and hundreds percent higher than what it probably should be. And
you compared it to TVs.
TVs have gone down, you know, housing and food's gone up a little bit, but it's around the inflation number. But when we look at cost of education or medical stuff, but we won't get into medical.
Medical was on there too. So the two that you and I were talking about that are way out of whack with the other things on the inflation, or rate of inflation, was education and medical.
Yes. And those are, I mean, and they're not even close. I mean, they're hundreds and hundreds of percentage up.
Those are both things that are subsidized.
Yes. So it makes you wonder, well, why are they going up so high? And it's because there's money around that just makes you want to push up your prices and keep it going.
Okay, so give you all some real numbers here. So I'm reading a couple stories, because back in June, the new rates for tuition came out for the University of Alabama in Auburn. And so they got several stories out there. So here's some real numbers. The tuition per semester for in-state residents at the University of Alabama this year, they say, will be unchanged. Oh. It's $5,390. Okay? Now, remember, that's per semester. It was $1,300 when I was a student in the 90s. Right. It is now $5,390 in-state. Tuition for out-of-staters will go up by 4%. The new number per semester for out-of-state students, $14,050 per semester, which is a $565 change, to the better. In other words, to the more. There are about 44 million borrowers with student debt, according to the 2017 report from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and we'll get into that. Also, Auburn's Board of Trustees back in June approved a 2% increase for tuition. They had said been steady for a couple years, but then they increased Auburn's tuition by 3% a year over the last couple of years. An average undergraduate student now pays $5,484 per semester at Auburn. And hey, I got, you know, a couple of my buddies that graduated about the same time as I did from Alabama, from Auburn. If y'all can text me, let me know what y'all were paying per semester. But it's now $5,484 per semester at Auburn, making the final dues for a four-year education at Auburn $43,872, not including books and lodging. All right, so They've been increasing by 3% year to year at Auburn. The in-state undergraduate students will see their tuition rise $409 per credit hour, up to 12 credit hours. Total increase sits at $8 price tag, while out-of-state undergraduates will pay $1,227 per credit dollars per credit hour, up to 12 hours. So what I'm pointing out here is from the 1990s to right now, these prices have gone up. And we come back from the break, I want to talk about this with James on what you're dealing with folks that get loans they can't pay.
Yep.
And campaign, what do they do? And also, I want to look at the same period of time we're talking about. I pulled some numbers here. I've got some charts we'll talk about that show the amount of student loan increase during the same periods of time that the tuition increased. And obviously, you say, well, of course it does. I mean, if more people, again, they raise the tuition, then there's more student. But which one came first? Chicken, egg? I will talk about it with you as well. Text line, phone line, 343-0106, 343-0106. You got one of those big student loans. It's probably time to pay attention to what's happening here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1221, FM Talk 106.5, and glad to have you along this hour. Good to have James Patterson in Alabama Consumer Law.
Good to be here.
And usually, well, we've talked about a whole range of things, but this absolutely is in the wheelhouse of what you do, because you see people that are dealing with this debt from student loans, trying to figure out what to do going forward.
Yeah, a lot of people come in and, you know, typical stuff, medical bills or behind on their house, but sometimes folks come in with, you know, they don't have much in credit card debt or medical bills. And I say, well, what's your student loan debt? And they tell me these outrageous numbers. And then I go,
well, you say outrageous. I mean,
$50,000, $75,000, $100,000. I had one client come in that had $230,000-something.
And in student loan debt.
In student loan debt. And it's from undergrad, couple, you know, graduate school.
Right.
Trying different degrees. And the degrees they have, I mean, they'll tell me what they got. And I'm trying to figure out what kind of job you could do. It's almost like the schools just say, yeah, just keep coming in. We'll give you whatever degree you want. Is that going to work in the workforce down the road? Probably not.
Yeah, and I want to get an interesting take we'll get to in a little bit on how some schools are trying maybe to work that better. But yeah, this comes off, you know, at least my theory that as the money is more available, then the tuitions went up. And then they realize the enrollment doesn't come down, so you can raise it again.
So keep coming.
Right.
There's the pressure of, hey, you know, your parents tell you go to school. Everybody tells you go to college, get an education. You're going to get a better job that way. And one thing we were talking about when you were talking about the rates going up from, you know, 20, 30 years ago till now, well, has the, I guess, the income rates, have they really gone
there
up
you
based
go.
On the student loans?
There you go. Ask y'all whatever you do. So James is an attorney. I'm in broadcast. Whatever you do, if you went to school, is there a commensurate amount of increase in salary for somebody? And I will say, in every case that I know of, there are probably exceptions. It's no.
Yeah, it's no. The rate of wages has been pretty stagnant or up very little compared to the amount of student loan money you have to pay.
Right.
It hasn't gone up any.
And remember, don't say it's inflation, because we just talked at the beginning that when you look at student loan or tuition, it has way outpaced inflation. It's only medical and education inflation
are way off the charts.
Everything else makes sense when related to inflation, except for this. All right. And then you sent the story to me, and this is interesting because we're talking about this side of it. The debt here, and it's a story from U.S. News, and says there are around 44 million borrowers with student debt.
Yes.
44 million out of 350-something million Americans.
Yeah, 300 million Americans. Of course, some of them are not going to school anymore.
That's right.
You have a lot of young people, or even when the recession hit, you had a lot of people going back to school.
Right, so if there weren't jobs, might as well go to school.
Exactly, because I have some clients coming in that are in their 40s or 50s mm-hmm. with a ton of student loan debt, and they just went to school to try to get into another field, and it didn't work out. Now they got all the student loan debt to deal with.
So, and you said, yes. So 44 million borrowers, according to a 2017 report from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, said outstanding student debt, and that's not paid. That's not that it's great student debt. Outstanding student debt sits at about $1.4 trillion.
More than credit card debt. In our country, there's more student loan debt owed by consumers than credit card debt.
Y'all let that sink in, because people really obsess and talk about credit card debt in this country and how overleveraged Americans are. They're living on. This is bigger than credit card debt.
Yes.
And this is for just, the thing is, a credit card debt can be compiled over decades and decades of people's lives. This is hopefully just accrued during a window of time when you're in school.
That's right. 4 years or 8 years total. Right. And it's a very short period of time, and it's just big amount of money that people owe.
It says here, as of this year, March of this year, 11% of that debt was at least 90 days delinquent or more.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you start looking at that, you run a business, you start looking at 90 or 120, you start going, we got people going to default on
exactly.
this. And so what does this mean? So you look at this, you're dealing with this as people come to you. Can they bankrupt out of this?
The short answer is you are able to bankrupt student loans. However, it's nearly impossible.
Okay, because I always heard that was the thing that was discussed, and people say, well, you can't bankrupt out of them.
Right. There's this test called the Bruner test, and it's a test that has been around for a while. It's been interpreted by courts because Congress never really has said through the bankruptcy code that you can discharge student loan debts, but only through this specific way to do it. I mean, and it's a position of undue hardship. And so if you can prove undue hardship by a couple of elements to the bankruptcy court, then you can get a discharge from your student loan debt. But the question's always been, what is undue hardship?
Right. This seems pretty darn subjective there.
It is very subjective. It's a very broad term. And so there's some courts in the country that have interpreted it more conservative and some mm-hmm. that have a little more liberal. But generally, when clients come in, if they're completely disabled. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
okay.
one thing
yes.
I look at. So you have no way to make any money going
right.
forward. You're not working in any field that you got your student loans in, and you can barely make it with the money you're making now if you're on Social Security disability or something. Then you probably fall into that factor to get it discharged.
Okay. If somebody is handicapped and can't work because of that, that seems reasonable.
Yeah, but that's sort of the best I can get with this test out there.
But what if, I mean, the second part, is it linked to the first? In other words, if you're not working in the field that you studied, not because you're handicapped, but you couldn't get a job bankruptcy, they don't care, do they?
Yeah, no, because you're still working and making money.
Right,
are you able to make some payments?
Right.
Or have you tried to, one of the elements they look at, did you try to make payments over a certain period of time? Did you just out of school? Did you just give up and stop paying the student loan companies? Or did you, try to make some payments?
Right.
So they look at these different elements. So, and part of that article I sent you is there's been some movement by some members of Congress to try to get Congress to define what this undue hardship is and maybe broaden that to include more folks for possible bankruptcy discharge of their student loan debt, because it's a noose around so many people, and it really precludes people from being able to get a house or car or get married. I mean, there's been a lot of numbers come out to say, look, people coming out of college and graduate school are waiting to do the things that are part of the American dream: buy a house, get married, have kids, because they're having $75,000 to $100,000 student loan debt.
They're servicing this debt. But then again, let me get on the other side here. Let me play the devil's advocate here and say these people signed up for these loans.
Yeah, that's true.
They signed up for these loans, whether they did stupid things or not. I mean, people do stupid things every day, and I'm sorry that we can't give you a helmet and knee pads to protect you from everything in life, right?
Right. Well, that's true, and they do go in here, but the cost of the school is outweighing what you can make. And you're being told that,
right,
hey, you can make good money, you're going to be okay. Get the student loans, come to school, you're going to get education, you're going to be able to, you're going to be easily able to pay these off.
Mm-hmm.
When that's not really true.
Okay, so we don't have it. So the way I see this is that, you know, if I'm not making excuses for people who built the loans, but there is a responsibility, and this goes back to my initial premise that the tuition's too high.
Yeah.
That we have, you know, I don't know if it's malpractice from the schools, but at least a failure to communicate, maybe.
Yeah, it's an accountability issue. It is one of these things where the schools, it's just for profit, pure profit. I mean, that's what these schools,
right,
are here for. And they're not telling the truth to the students. And there's been some graduate schools that have been sued over the years because they were putting out numbers of, hey, we have this many people employed after graduating in these kind of fields. And turned out they were just counting anybody that was working maybe as a lawyer to fast food. And they were just throwing them in the same pot. And so when people would look up the information.
Yeah, that's a bit, that strikes me as fraudulent.
Yeah, so you have a lot of schools that are doing that kind of stuff. So you have these things people believe and they get in there and go, wait a minute, I'm not going to be able to, you know, make any money with this degree I have.
Yeah, but this goes back to the idea, like when you pointed out the two things that have not, on their list, that did not reflect the regular rate of inflation. This is medical and tuition. I said, yep, you know, both of those are subsidized. And that's the thing that I think leads to this trap. Let's just talk about the tuition thing. If it was not subsidized, the market wouldn't bear it. The market would only, the price of entry, mm-hmm, which would be your education, your degree, your sheepskin to get into the door that you know how to do this, the price of entry would never be more than what you could recoup,
right,
as a job.
Right.
Through your hourly wage, you know, or, and that could be salary or whatever, but in other words, what your time is worth with that education.
Right.
It would fail in a 2-year time period, right? That
it
people would go,
would,
you,
yeah,
know what? Old Bob, my cousin, got out, and he can't make anything, and he can't make anything,
well,
so
you,
this tuition's
that,
too much money. I'm not going to pay that to go.
Right. You'd have less people going to school then.
Right. We'll get to the text when we get back, and I am. People say, well, what about a trade school and all that? You could do better. Sure. You can. And maybe that's more in line with what you can earn. We'll get back to this discussion with James when we return right here on Midday Mobile. Hey, they're still counting, aren't they?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Okay, I'm sorry. Hold on. He's adding toner as we speak. Hey, welcome back. It's Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Oh, talking about Lady James Patterson, also watching for some reason the Facebook Live of the counting of the provisional votes that a lot of people are watching for the outcome in House District 102. Right now, the printer, I'm telling y'all just what's going on. The printer is offline. Let's get some of that. The printer's offline, and it looks like we have a jam. We've got the technician here trying to unjam the paper. And there's about 7 people standing around waiting for some. It's like every other office. The printer is jammed. There's, you know, the Willie Gray and the Shane Striger campaign are waiting for the final verdict here on who wins. And somebody's got put some paper jammed in here.
All interested parties in just a moment.
All right. Hold on. Let's go to Don Davis right now.
The number of ballots cast for 91. Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth, 39. Twinkle Kavanaugh, 46. For Attorney General Troy King, 45. Steve Marshall, 38. For House District 102, Willie Gray, 13. Shane Stringer, 16.
There you go.
For Associate Justice,
that's the one we're wondering.
Supreme, yeah, Court, place 1. Brad Menheim.
All right, with those things, the rest of that has been settled. So the way I understand it, at least from what just came out there, then that gives it to Shane Stringer, who had a 25-vote lead before they did this count. And in this case, you had 13 going to Willie Gray, 16 going to Shane Stringer. Unless I'm missing something, just the way that printer is there at probate court, it looks like it is Shane Stringer. So, Dalton, when we can confirm that, make sure I had everything correct, just let me know. And if they get back to, get back to trying to unjam the printer there down at probate or add toner to it or whatever they're doing. All right, continuing our conversation. And I'm sorry to have interrupted right in the middle of this, but we are watching the probate court in action. Which
it's riveting to you.
See, now, it's good to have you in here in studio and see the kind of things I watch during the break. But it is with all eyes on there, and to see that the printer is offline, like comes up on everybody else's computer.
Yeah, everybody's office has that problem.
It makes it realistic. All right, we're talking student loan debt, and also how we get there in student loan. You know, this idea I had just bounced around last week when you and I interacted on Twitter about this, that it seemed like tuition was too high, and it had moved at a rate that didn't match inflation. I compared it just anecdotally with what I was paying in the 1990s to be a student at the University of Alabama to what it is now. It's a fivefold increase.
It's out of whack. I mean, it's out of whack based on our economy, based on what you can make getting out of school.
There. That's what you, because there's somebody who could graduate with the same degree I graduated with back then is not going to make more than five times as much in the broadcast business. I mean, it's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. Same thing with any kind of...
So how do we do... Whether you're an engineer, whether you're in broadcast, whatever you get your degree in, how do we... That should be a sign that there's rot in the middle here.
Yeah, well, and one way to deal with it is, just like any other debt you can in the country, have it go through a bankruptcy process. If you are in that dire of a position, be able to discharge these things and not make it practically impossible to discharge. I mean, you have 18 to 22-year-olds getting $7,500,000 of debt at that age, and they're not able to ever bankrupt it. And that sounds crazy. You can buy houses, you can buy cars, you
bankrupt
can do all
that
stuff. You can get rid of that all day long. I mean, businesses, open business, closed business, you can do all that. But the student loan debt, that's shackled to you. You can even discharge, you know, taxes and stuff. But student loan debt's going to shackle you for a very long time.
I want to go back to circle around here, if you didn't hear us at the beginning of the last segment. What kind of numbers are we talking about? 44 million borrowers with student debt as of 2017 report. And actually, as of March of this year, 11% of those were in some form of default, 90 days plus. How much money are we talking about, y'all? $1.4 trillion that you told me is more than?
It is more than credit card debt in our country.
This is why I continue to squawk from the hilltop about this, and not a lot of people listening. But I think down the road, people will be like, "Man, did you realize what happened with the student loan debt?"
And it's becoming a little more mainstream, I guess. And even I think I posted on this Twitter the other day. There's a TV show. There's a game show.
That's what started this conversation.
That's right.
That's exactly right. The was it Spike TV or somebody?
Yeah,
has
one of those TV stations. And I watched a little bit of that. Read a little about it. And the guy in there, the host of the show, wanted to put this show on just to really bring this to awareness, to start telling people, hey, the student loan's a big deal. You have people wanting to come on the show to get rid of some of their student loan debt, because a lot of them are never going to be able to pay that off over 30 years or 25 years, whatever the loan terms are. And it's going to keep you from getting houses and cars, and it's going to cause a drain on the economy. I mean, think about 44 million people that have this debt. Well, they can't go buy a car. They can't go buy a house because they have to maintain and service this student loan.
And if y'all didn't hear that TV show, the idea is a game show, but the prize would be getting your student loan. You play whatever foolish game it is for the game show, but instead of getting a brand new car and cash and a year's worth of Rice-A-Roni, you get your student loan paid off.
Yeah, or a percentage of it paid off, right?
Right. I want to talk percentages here in a little bit, too, with you. Let's go to the phone, and Paul is in Mobile up next. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Sean.
And James.
I just want to make sure that people understand and that it's put out very clearly that more education means more money. You know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts out the data every month showing the correlation between unemployment and the amount of money people make compared to the education level.
What do you think about this, what we just were, that James and I were talking about, that are you, okay, from 1990s to now when my nephews went, the over fivefold increase or fivefold increase I've seen in tuition at the University of Alabama. Somebody that graduates with the same degree this year that I graduated in the 90s with it's not going to make five times as much money in that field. I mean, it has moved, the percentages aren't lined up here.
Well, you know, instead of giving the richest people in America a tax break, we could have paid for everybody to go to college.
I figured that's why I took your call first.
As a country. Yes. In the long run.
And listen, you and I are never going to agree on that part of it. So let's get in the nuance that at least maybe we have some chance to discuss here. Do you feel that tuition rates are higher than they should be? Are they artificially high because of the availability of that loan money?
Absolutely. You know, the Pell Grants have come around to bite us in the butt.
There you go. That's what I'm getting to. And listen, you and I, on the 30,000-foot view, we're going to disagree. But down in the weeds, I think we may have some agreement. All right, we'll go back to the phones, too. But I want to read this text to you, James. This was good. Chester says, hey, if a person's using a lawyer to file for bankruptcy, how do you collect on your bill?
I get that a lot from friends and family. And usually we charge up front, you know, before
there you
before
go. But these are questions people
file.
Have.
Yes. So.
This texture says the problem with student loans is that they're backed by the government. When the government backs anything, the group on the receiving end is going to raise their prices.
Well, and look, yes, you're absolutely right on that. And I look at the student loan issue, and these are federal student loans we're talking about.
Right.
So the Congress
there's
is
a bunch
about,
of different kinds.
Yeah, there's your private student loans, and that's a whole different, that's for another day.
Yes.
But with these federal loans, I look at it sort of as the bailout of the housing. When we had the housing issue,
mm-hmm.
who was stuck with that? You and I,
yeah,
the taxpayer, all of us listening here, we're the taxpayer.
Right.
We got stuck with that, so to bail out banks and stuff. So, you know, the government's always there bailing people out. This is some of this that Congress is looking at is sort of a bailout in a way of helping student loan people get out if they could qualify these for bankruptcy.
And you're saying is taking something that exists and defining and maybe opening up more opportunities for people to bankrupt out of student loans.
And
there's some path there, but it's very narrow.
Yeah,
right now
it's super narrow. I mean, very small percentage. So you'd be opening up, not everybody still would qualify to bankrupt your student loans, but you'd open it up for better cases down the road.
All right, let's go to Gary in Mobile next. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Sean.
Man.
Hey, I want to throw this out there for everybody. Every parent of a teenager and any teenager who's considering going to college should go on, of all places, YouTube. And there's a video you can watch. It's called Success in the New Economy. And it's about 10 minutes long, maybe.
Okay.
And it's animated and it's cute, but it spells out all the details as to why most students, or maybe not even most, I forget the numbers they use, but you don't need to go to college, and this is why, and it spells it out. And you need to look at things like completion rates, graduation rates. The national average of students who actually finish four-year degree is like in the upper 60s. I think here locally, South is in the upper 30s. So
what?
You're going to...
Whoa.
Loan bill back.
Whoa, yellow flags on the field. Yellow flags. Yeah. South is
Google it. I think they're in the upper 30s.
That's it?
To actually graduate.
And Gary's probably right on that because a lot of folks that come in to see me, they didn't complete school. So they got, you know, 3 years in or 3.5 years in. They got all this debt. And
if you're 3.5 years in and you don't finish up, I'm going to put a foot in your backside.
Actually, too, to finish a four-year degree takes about 5. Yeah,
that's what happened with you, Sean. Right?
Yeah, it did with me. But then again, it's working some hours here. Thank you, Gary. Appreciate the call. Dalton, who, a graduate of the University of South Alabama, one of the 30%.
One of the 37%.
37%.
Yeah, quick Google search says 37% in 2015, 2016, the graduation rate for South Alabama.
Wow.
Yeah, 37.
But South seems to be doing fine. Money-wise.
Yeah, but I mean, that raw number there is shocking to me. I guess you get this idea that at least half of the people.
You think. I mean, you're paying all this money. Don't you want to finish and commit? But I think some people, they start looking at the numbers and go, oh my gosh, this is really expensive. What am I going to get?
We could do a better job of educating people to look at that before they start paying.
You would think so.
People talk about trade schools and all these things. Those are great. And if people could see that beforehand.
Well, that would be helpful. And that data is out there, but you got to funnel it to people. And there's a pressure of everybody going to college, mm-hmm. everybody going to school. Your parents, mm-hmm. they go to school, get education. The theory is more education means higher wages. Well, is that really true at the end of the day?
Well, it does. Then it probably, you can still argue the higher education means higher wages than the starting point,
that's
the baseline,
true, but
right? That is true. But
comparatively to the student loan cost, is it really higher?
Alabama and Auburn are, give or take here, 5 times as expensive as they were when I was a student.
Mm-hmm.
in the jobs you get, if somebody graduates with a communications degree from Alabama like I did, do they have the just... Any individual can do things, but does the rank-and-file person have a 5 times bigger income in that field? It's no.
Well, yeah, of course
no.
not. No.
No.
Yeah, not at all.
Let's go to the phones, and Pat is in Fairhope. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, man. Good.
Hey, I got a suggestion. I've got 2 kids in college, and I'll give you a scenario. My daughter took an online class at Auburn, 3 hours. My total bill for that online class was $2,200 because between 3 hours and 12 hours is the same. I paid student activity fees. I paid every fee in the world. And my son, who's an engineering major, is up there. He went to junior college to take calculus too. His bill was $558.
Mm, bingo.
So that goes to show you they charge you for an online class, even though she's at Camp Beckwith right now as a tutor or a counselor.
But she's.
I still had to pay
activity fee,
student fees, and everything else associated with that for a 3-hour class. So
it's crazy.
I mean, there's an option that the class. And this is the only class she had to have this class there because it was required, and the only time they offered it was in the summer. She's going to graduate in the spring, but there is an option. But it's outrageous. So me and you've talked about this before.
Yep.
My last quarter at Auburn, 1992, $436.
Yeah.
For 16 hours, and now it's bumping $10,000 a year.
Yeah, it's $5,464 a semester is the one story I saw, the new rate. I mean,
yep.
Can somebody who graduates now compared to back in the olden days in the 90s, back in the wagon wheel days when you and I graduated, do they make 5 times as much for the job and occupation? They don't.
No, not even close.
There's no way. Yeah. I would argue some people make less money compared to the cost of living now. I think some of them it's just not even worth going to school for. I agree.
There we go.
But anyway,
appreciate the call, man. Thank you. We're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. We'll take your calls, get back to the phones here at 343-0106. Plus, we'll try to read through these umpteen texts coming through here. Try to sort those and get those lined up when we get back. Coming right back, James Patterson, Alabama Consumer Law, my guest, and he'll answer your questions. So stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:51, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. James Patterson, my buddy with Alabama Consumer Law in studio. And we've talked about a lot of things, by the way. Any new... anything new on Equifax?
Not really. They're
okay.
Still...
All right.
Lots of talking and stuff, but
because no. I could wait off into
yeah,
that.
Yeah, next time I come in, we'll update.
Good deal. Because we're talking about student loan debt and this idea that maybe the bankruptcy proceedings on student loan debt may need to be more like houses and cars.
Yeah, open up more like credit card debt, or at least make the very narrow window now open up somewhat. Maybe make it a door so people
right.
can bankrupt a little more. And you don't have to have this absolute harsh destitute condition. You file bankruptcy, maybe there's, you can have some other ways to get rid of this debt or at least get partial relief from
right.
these
so
debts.
That's like the short term, right? So there's the Band-Aid, Mike, and then I'm talking about the cure, and the cure is to point out to folks, like you have to, this ratio between what it costs now in
yes.
tuition, and we're not looking at Ivy League, we're you and I both graduated from state schools.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Talking about in-state schools.
Yeah, just your average, everyday
regular,
college.
Right. And what it costs now versus, the 90s. And the idea is if it costs 5 times as much, you can't go make 5 times as much in those professions. There's something out of whack. And I think it's because it's artificially inflated by.
Because the money was there
yep.
to get from the government to pay for the schools. Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of text here trying to get to. So, and hey, listen, I appreciate the service of many of y'all and your sons and daughters. People saying, doing it through the military. And that's great in individual circumstances. I don't think that solves 44 million.
No. And there's a lot of folks that are able to do it like that. But we have millions and millions of people that would not go into the military or qualify for the military that have to go through colleges a different way, and they got to get student loan debt.
Let's go to Garrett in Mobile up next. Hey, Garrett.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Doing good.
Hey, glad you mentioned the GI Bill. I'm a veteran myself.
Well, thank you.
Years old, college graduate, but yeah, I agree with y'all's premise on the student loan crisis, but I just kind of wanted an alternative opinion.
Okay.
My me and my sister are both college graduates. I went to South. She went to University of Alabama. She's finishing up at UAB for PT school right now.
Good school.
And
yeah,
exactly. The but you know the reason that we could do that, you know, I grew up in a split household and my father worked at Ingalls, and you know it's not easy. I understand coming from hard circumstances, but at the same time, you know, sometimes you just got to take individual responsibility and just work hard. If you work hard in school, you will get scholarships. There are people out there that want to help you. Like, there just are. If you're willing to help yourself, there are people out there, and there are programs designed to help people. And also, going back to put it kind of in perspective, is the, you know, look at the housing crisis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because you can afford a $400,000 house doesn't mean that you, or excuse me, just because you can qualify for a $400,000 house doesn't mean that you should buy one.
So agree.
Maybe you should start out at community college or something, you know, something of that nature.
Well, sure. And I'm following, Garrett, what you said, and I know that back right before the crash, I remember I tell this story all the time, when I was sitting there watching a football game or whatever, and pointing out to my buddy when there was a DITEC ad on,
DITEC,
and they said,
or AmeriQuest.
Right, they were going to loan you 125% of the value of your house. And
yes.
I said, I'm no math magician, but I don't know how that's possible.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? And that was artificially inflated. The way I think, Garrett, I think it's incumbent upon us to point out, at least in my case, I want to point out, I think the cost of college education has become overinflated. And I think if you let some market forces bear on this, it would come down, or at least not keep going up. Every story we read, it goes up by this percent. Is that really reflecting what people get for their dollar and that education?
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree 100% with you. I just wanted to offer just what individuals can do for themselves, you know, just instead of just taking out a loan. I mean, you wouldn't take out a loan to buy just whatever, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, obviously you take out a loan to buy your car or your house, but you know, it's just kind of ridiculous to do some of that stuff. You know, in my case, it's pretty easy because I had the postnatal living GI Bill. But, you know, just like you said, not everybody can do that.
Right.
So.
No, I appreciate your service, and you're talking about different ways to get it paid for, and I still, and Garrett, I appreciate the call. I want those things to still be available, those different mechanisms to pay for it. I'm just asking, is the tuition fair?
Well, I think the answer is no, it's not. And again, like he was just talking about, sure, you can do a lot of things, but again, you have an 18 to 22-year-old, which is a majority of these, trying to make these decisions that are going to affect you for the rest of your life. Well, hey, I need to go to school. My parents don't have money to pay for it. I got to sign here and get money to go to school. You don't really have a choice. You know, it's not like they're offering, this class is going to be this much. It's across the board. Here's the amount of money it's going to cost you to go to school. Sign, go, and you just do it. And, you're kind of forced to do that. So
look at it. I mean, some of the numbers, I know this is not surprising to you with what you do, but this husband and wife have $100,000 in student loan debt as a couple. That's
almost the average I see when people come in. When it's husband and wife, somebody's got 60, the other one's got 40, and you know they're making it, but it's tough. And you got all this student loan debt, and it keeps you from buying a bigger house, a nicer car, putting your kids in maybe a better school.
Yeah.
It shackles you on what you can do because you've artificially paid for an education that maybe this $100,000 education should only cost them combined maybe 40.
Yeah, I wonder what the real market number would be. You know, if there was not that artificial inflation, what would the real market number be?
And that's a great question. Maybe there's a study out there, but I'd love to see a study like that.
Now, this texture, gosh, we got so many. We're going to be up against the break. I've got some great text in here and great questions. Well, I'll tell you what, we're up against the end of the hour. Dang it, I'm going to have you come back.
Yeah, I'll be happy to come back.
Because there's so many angles people are bringing up now that this needs a part two.
Just let me know. I'll be happy to come back.
All right, people want to get in touch with you online.
Just find us on alaconsumerlaw.com is my Twitter account, and then just alalaw.com is my website. So just look me up, James Patterson.
All right, man, I'll get you back soon. Part two is coming.
Yes,
all right, 1:58, we'll head to the news, and then we're coming right back. President speaking to the VFW. And and also what's next here when it comes to tariffs. Brendan Kirby joins us next.